From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Jim Williams with you today on ABQ Connect. Hope you've had a great week. We're looking forward to Freedom Celebration tomorrow, Saturday. It's free, June 29th, all at the Isleta Amphitheater. It's going to be spectacular. I mean, the music, remember, this is a free event, Freedom Celebration. We're going to have Colton Dixon, Sanctus Real, Andrew Rip, Austin French, Caleb and John. The Calvary Worship Team will be out there. There'll be food trucks, Kids Fun Zone. Whole thing is free, and there's a fireworks show to cap off the whole thing right after Skip gives a little word from the Bible, and I just think your family's going to have a great time. So if you can make it out to Freedom Celebration tomorrow, doors open at 4 o'clock, and it'll be absolutely amazing. And this new venue, the Isleta Amphitheater, is really going to accommodate a lot more people. Last year we did it at the out at the Balloon Fiesta Park. The year before that, we actually had it on the campus of Calvary, which that was really amazing, but way too many people. Our campus was just not designed for it. So hope to see you out there. I'm joined in studio by Brian Cochran, my good friend with John Moore Associates. You might go to johnmoore.com/the insights tab. We're going to be talking about some things today, but there's all kinds of free resources for you and your family about how to invest, biblical principles of investing. And I want you to think that this is Brian, I got a question for you that's not on our list. There is a right way to handle money, and there is a wrong way. Are there 500 ways in between to do it correctly?
Oh, yeah. There's if you think about it in terms of biblical principles around money, mm-hmm. you know, things like to seek contentment, avoid greed, avoid
giving.
Debt.
Giving, yeah,
give generously. Yeah, not seek joy through possessions. All of those things are pretty broad principles, and within that, you have thousands and thousands of decisions you can make. So that's where, you know, our conversation last month, we talked about the money date and why mm-hmm. couples need to talk about money. It's because even if you're following biblical principles, you still have the exact decisions to make of where does the next dollar go.
Right. And you mentioned the money date outline. And this is another resource you're providing to people for free. We're going to talk about that a little bit more, but you can actually download a little template that will really guide you and your spouse through a really interesting meeting a couple times a year, you recommend.
Yep, and there's also the podcast, I imagine, is up from last month's conversation
yes.
where
yes.
you and I discussed the money date, so that's a great conversation around the topic. But yeah, if you go to that johnmoore.com insights page and click on the most recent insight post, which was the webinar we hosted earlier this month on the topic of marriage and money, we provide the download there where you can download a fillable PDF that you can then either keep electronic or print and go into a money date with your spouse and maybe for the first time have a very intentional dialogue around how you manage money.
Well, and money, we've already said, and you've said this to us many times for the many years you've been on the radio with us, you've talked about how money so many times causes problems in marriages.
Yep.
So you're first recommending on our notes today to listen to wise counsel and get to know your spouse in a financial way. I hadn't really thought about getting to know a spouse in a financial way. How do you do that?
Well, and you can think of this in terms of new couples, you know, just getting married. Got a lot to learn about the person you're engaging the rest of your life with, hopefully. And but then you've got couples that have known each other a long time, but maybe don't really think much about their spouse's financial personality. So what do I mean by that? You know, we all have personality traits. In my household, I'm a driver. I'm go, go, go. And my wife's more cautious, hesitant. And in our recent webinar we hosted, we had Joe and Pam. Joe is one of our financial advisors, and his wife Pam joined us, and he's the conservative one in that relationship. So it's not always male and female. And his wife's very much go-go. That woman's got more energy in her pinky nail than I've got in my whole body.
Yeah.
So they had to learn early on that she might want to go fast and make decisions and take action, but she had to respect Joe's personality to be cautious, be slow. And you can't go all one way or the other. It's not right or wrong here. It's like a lot of things in marriage, right, Jim, where it's compromise. Mm. So that might mean for my family, for example, if I see a giving opportunity come up, I want to get into my giving fund and donate that money like in the next 5 minutes. I got a lot going on. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it now. Where my wife, I want to talk to her about it first, and she might be in the middle of some, you know, crisis with the kids. My wife stays home and manages our household. So she, you know, a lot of her ups and downs and her challenges happen around the house. So she might say, can we talk about this later? Or I need to think about that. Or can you tell me more over dinner tonight? So that causes some friction sometimes. I'm like, no, I can't wait. I got it in front of me right now. Can we just do this? But you can imagine the conflict that would come if I didn't respect her desire to slow down. On the same token, if she waits too long, I get frustrated, you know, yes. So we have to meet in the middle. And so the first step in that is just being kind enough to understand your spouse's personality around any decisions, but specifically around money. Because some people could be very go, go, go about some things, but finances bring us a sense of stress. So that's a great place to start for couples.
Brian, I get the sense that if you saw a need, mm-hmm. you'd want to be giving to that need. But that might not always be what God wants you to do, because you haven't taken the time to ask the Lord about it. So it sounds like your wife is balancing you in that way. It's like, well, mm-hmm. let's think about it, let's pray about it, and I don't view your wife as a procrastinator at all. She's just busy with a lot.
She gets things done. There's no question about that. But the way I like to think of this, Jim, is the person going too fast and the person going too slow can have money regrets, right? A money regret for someone going too fast could be giving away some money to a charity, and then another opportunity comes up and you go, oh my gosh, I just spent my whole charitable budget here, or I bought something here when I should have saved the money for this later. So going too fast can do that. Or in investing, it could mean I invested in something that turned out not to be wise because I went too quick, didn't do all my research, didn't make a wise decision. So I can have regret for going too fast, but we have many clients because of where we are in Albuquerque here with a lot of engineers. Engineers tend to be analytical. Analyticals tend to be risk averse. Mm. We have a lot of clients that have financial regrets because they went too slow. Mm. I'll use an example. Back in March of 2020, what was happening in March of 2020, Jim?
COVID,
baby. Yeah. And in the markets, what was happening is the market dropped over 30% in the course of just a couple of weeks. Right. So I'll never forget, I called a client that we had been holding a lot of cash reserves for. And I said to him, I said, this is the time. I suggest that you take action. We don't ever tell our clients, we give recommendations. I said, I recommend we act and we invest in this market that has just declined.
Well, and by the way, that actually might be contrary to what a lot of people thought, because and you were on the radio with us when this was going on.
Yep.
And you had clients and others had clients that we're going to get out of the market.
Yep.
And you recommended stay in the market.
Yeah, we wanted to go towards the risk at that time, which was, like you said, counter to the average. And this client just froze. He could not make a decision out of fear and out of his natural personality, which I understood. So I said, I know I'm not going to ask you to make this decision on this phone call. May we talk in 2 days and you and your wife can talk about this. 2 days later, I call him back. Doesn't make a decision. Doesn't, 6 months of this. Mm. Well, the opportunity had largely passed by then. So going too fast or too slow can be bad. And a lot of times couples see this as an opportunity for conflict, which is true, but it's also an opportunity if you have a fast and a slow person in the marriage to benefit from that, right? Like you said, Emily can slow me down to help us make better decisions, and I can speed her up to make sure we take action. A lot of great couples when it comes to money are people who have differing personalities. They just have to communicate enough to find the middle ground. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, there's so many things I'm thinking about on a couple notes I've taken as you're speaking. There's a decision to be made. Many times that decision might be overwhelming in terms of money. Brian, a lot of money to me is $1,000, but a lot of money to a lot of people is $100,000. And I would have anxiety because maybe I'm not trusting God the way I need to. And so coveting money is also a problem, right?
It is. And that's where we get into the goal setting, where the money date is so important. Is the money date makes sure that your goals and the driving factors for your money decisions are based on biblical principles and shared priorities. Mm-hmm. So if I'm really driving towards buying a new vehicle, and that's taking away from my generosity, that's a violation of biblical principles. Mm-hmm. If I really want to give away all of our money, but my wife is conservative and wants to have a good emergency reserve and save for the future, I'm violating our shared goals that hopefully we've set. So you have to make sure you're being sensitive to both when it comes to money decisions. And that's why the money date we talked about last month is so important, because that's really designed to get both spouses' priorities on the table so that we can be on the same page and moving the same direction. Then when opportunities come, we're thinking about the same things, we're talking about the same priorities, and we can hold each other accountable saying, hey, honey, I know where you're coming from with this spending or giving goal, but that's not really what we talked about in our goals. So can we talk about that some more and see if maybe our goals need to change in light of this new opportunity?
So you're connected to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Your wife is connected to a lot of people, you know, other parents and different things. And you both have jobs, full-time jobs, and managing the household is maybe even more complicated mm-hmm. than your job sometimes. I'm thinking that if you never ask Emily what her goals were for your giving fund, her goals might be different than yours. And so that's not a bad thing, but so many couples never talk about it.
It's not a bad thing until I act on it.
Yeah.
And what we see with a lot of couples when they come in to see us as financial planners is we quickly sense the tension of years that constitute dozens of small missed expectations that pile up. So for example, if my wife expects that we're going to give regularly to church, but I'm always giving money to this missionary and that person, and we're never supporting the local congregation, that she might tolerate that for a while, but after years, when does that become a rub that turns into a blister? Or if I'm always spending all this money on new shoes because that's what I like, and she wants to make sure we're saving for retirement, again, for, you know, every once in a while, that's okay. Maybe I can get away with it. But what's the unspoken missed expectation? Again, that's the purpose of the communication. And I'll use the example of Joe and Pam again, you know, the two folks in our recent webinar that we recorded. You know, they really did a good job early on talking about their priorities, and they both agreed on the same priorities. That didn't mean there was no conflict, but it gave them a center ground to come back to, and they could come back to that spot. And that was kind of their North Star, was their goal. And their goal is to have financial flexibility later in life. So that led them to be consistent savers and to avoid the distractions. And then it gave them also the basis to communicate with each other and say, hey, I thought our goal was this. You're saying we want to now go do that. And this, for some couples, are going, well, of course we do this. This is automatic. If you're doing that, that's great. But I'll tell you, from my experience dealing with hundreds of couples, most don't come in being able, you know, with the ability to clearly describe their spouse's money personality and then describe how they honor that with their own behavior. It's a pretty rare thing.
Well, in our next segment, we're going to talk about starting the conversation. So if you're a person that maybe you're planning on getting married, maybe you've been married for 10 years or longer, and you haven't had the conversation in either scenario, you got to know how to start the conversation. That's what we're going to talk to Brian Cochran about. Brian Cochran is a certified Kingdom Advisor, financial planner, and the president of John Moore Associates. You can find out more about John Moore at johnmoore.com. They provide some really neat free information on their Insights tab. So I would highly recommend that you take advantage of that that particular resource. We'll be back with Brian Cochran on ABQ Connect right after these messages. Jim Williams with you here on ABQ Connect, inviting you to Freedom Celebration tomorrow at the Isleta Amphitheater. The doors open at 4 o'clock. It's an absolutely free event. The music will be just off the chart. Colton Dixon, Sanctus Real, Andrew Rip, Austin French, Caleb and John, the Calvary Worship Team. Skip Heitzik will be giving a message, and then we'll have an amazing fireworks show. It truly is. I mean, we're talking about not only our freedom as Americans, but our freedom in Christ. And I think it's just such a fun thing. There'll be, you know, bouncy houses and a kids fun zone. And I mean, it's really for everybody. And we haven't had it at the Isleta Amphitheater, at least I'm not aware, in the last few years, but it's really a great venue. Easy parking, the event is free, and there'll be security, there'll be all kinds of stuff. Do want to give you a warning if you're carrying a big bag, maybe a big purse or anything like that. you got to kind of think Isotopes games. They only let you come in with a bag if it's clear. So again, we're wanting safety for everybody. Kind of keep those things in mind. Go to freedomabq.com to look at all the details, and we appreciate you listening to ABQ Connect. Brian Cochran is our certified financial planner and kingdom advisor. He's the president of John Moore Associates. Of course, you're very familiar with him. He's on the show with us every Friday, giving us financial updates. Brian, we're going to start this segment with a conversation. Let's say couple's been married 10 or 20 years. How do they start a conversation about money?
Yeah, it's a big thing. You know, the money date is a great way to do it, and we've referenced that a couple times. We had a whole hour on that last month. That's so important. And really what that starts with is sitting down and identifying your personal goals and priorities, asking your spouse to do the same, and then bringing them together. So if I were to start a money date, I'd start it with prayer, inviting the Holy Spirit into the conversation to influence your thoughts and your priorities.
Hey, let's remind people, the money date is you need to make arrangements for somebody to watch the kids.
Yep.
You need to maybe bring in some food or something like that, but you don't want any outside distractions for this date.
Now, this is not a restaurant conversation. This is a home in a peaceful setting where the only topic allowed is money for 60 to 90 minutes. But the key here is to show up and start to document your goals and priorities. So it might take you 15 minutes of solo time where you go to separate rooms and just start writing. And you write down everything you can think of, and then bring that together. And that will stimulate some conversation. You know, what's important to you? You know, you ask your husband or wife, and then bring it back to you and answer the same question and have a dialogue, and then prioritize together amongst those goals what's most important to the family. And sometimes this initiates further conversation. It says, man, this really means we need to be more intentional about our money. And that could initiate a conversation with a professional like myself, a financial planner, who can help facilitate conversation and come to recommendations and solutions. Maybe it turns into enrolling in something like Financial Peace, which is the Dave Ramsey program for coaching around money and getting on the same page. That can really turn the corner for a lot of couples' finances, because it's several weeks. By the end of the conversation, you've got some guidance there. It could mean that you've identified some goals and now you need to change your behavior. So now you're starting to track your finances more clearly using either like your bank website or the FaithFi app is a good tool you could download and start to track and set goals electronically and then check in on those periodically. So the output, the outcome of that conversation will be different for every couple. But my hope is, and the way the money date's designed, is that by the end, you're both heading the same direction. So whatever the next step is, at least you're moving the same way instead of maybe going down different paths.
I shouldn't think this way, Brian, but I'm thinking that, let's say the husband asks his wife, you know, what are your financial goals? And for some reason I have in my mind that the wife's thinking, we've been married for 20 years. Why haven't you ever asked this of me before? So you kind of have to come to this first meeting, this startup of the conversation, acknowledging, yeah, hey, you know, we've kind of blown it. We didn't talk about this. So now we're going to be forgiving. Whatever's happened has happened, and we need to come together now and talk about where we're growing and going in the future.
Well, and in that way, Jim, that's not different than any other aspect of marriage, right?
Yeah.
And we always have to give each other a lot of grace. A marriage that doesn't have any grace involved is, you know, could be tough because we all make mistakes and we all fall short. It's just our nature. So you're exactly right. And if that's your fear or hesitation, then start with that. I mean, I lean into that feeling of guilt or that feeling of frustration with your spouse and just start with that and say, I really wish we could have had this conversation 10 years ago because now we're in financial trouble or we just have a lack of direction.
You said during the break something that was interesting. Most people are pushed to this initial conversation that have been in a relationship for a long time, either because they've had a windfall of some kind or they are in trouble.
Yeah. It's either for really good reasons or really bad reasons. So the windfall could be, I just got a raise, and for the first time in our marriage, I feel like we have some margin. We have more money than we need just to get by, so we need to now make a decision with this extra. Or, like you said, the second option is, wow, this credit card debt, it just can't continue like this. We're in trouble. Or you just lost your job and now our income's been cut down by half and now we have to make some tough decisions about where the money's going each month. But either way, highs and lows, that's the job of a spouse, is to be there side by side, right? It's just like our health and our raising our kids. I mean, it's all going to be highs and lows, right?
Yes.
And parent caregiving, I know you've been there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these parent or areas of life that require the same principles of love, grace, understanding, you know, all the aspects of love, right? So the key here is that you start having the conversation and then move forward from there. You can't just say, hey, what do you want to do with our money? I'd like to save for retirement. Great. And then not do anything. Mm-hmm. You have to start making steps, but it starts with a commitment to have the conversation. And this might be different for someone who's not married yet or is a newlywed. Some of the same principles apply, but hopefully money came up somewhere in your premarital counseling. We've seen some couples where one of the parents actually paid for the fee for Financial Peace University before they got married. So by the time they actually tied the knot and were officially married, they already had gone through some financial planning exercise that gave them a good running start. That's right. Amazing.
I don't know if you remember before you got married to Emily, but I don't know what kind of premarital counseling and everything you had, but it's my impression, at least this was true with me, especially the Christian community is interested in perpetuating relationships, and they get enthralled with the romance of it. And that's all nice, warm, fuzzy feelings, and it's not bad. But it's also not practical. Like, for example, I said this to Pastor Skip Heitzig. I said, I think when you are getting engaged, you should... by the way, this is just my opinion, okay, guys? I'm just telling you my own experience. I said, I think that you ought to get a credit report on the person you're about to marry.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody frowns like, well, that's not very romantic. And by the way, you can absolutely marry somebody that has bad credit. But you should know before you get married. And you ought to see if they're open to maybe making some behavioral changes to change that whole course. Mm-hmm. And again, that starts the conversation.
Well, and I think that's a realistic thing, because acknowledging that, you know, financial issues is the second most common cause of divorce. Mm-hmm. So why would we not want to get ahead of this with conversations or actually getting the numbers out? I mean, it could be really tough. So the key here is, once you start these money conversations, whether it's premarital counseling or whatever, or you're 10 years in and there's been financial strain or opportunity, you know, start creating a cadence to that, a pace. If money's really tight, maybe it's a weekly check-in where you pull out your finance app and you check on your spending plan. You know, that might be necessary in tight times. Maybe it's a monthly check-in, but I would say at least every 6 months revisiting your goals and then having maybe the more financially inclined spouse monitoring that and communicating regularly. That's good. But the key is, don't let too much time pass, because the conversation doesn't get easier the more time you spend between these dialogues.
I'm a retired banker, as you know, and I remember seeing people that had $300,000 or $400,000 a year in income. You know, physicians, lawyers, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing and being in wonder that the people that made that much money, it wasn't exceptional that they would have more money than somebody that made $50,000 a year.
Or more debt.
Yeah. They would have way more debt, yeah. But they didn't have more disposable income. I was always shocked in that way. But I will say in the same breath, it sounds like you're asking people to make huge sacrifices, but I'm going to rebut that a little bit, because if you're driving the fanciest Lexus and trading out of that car every 2 years, the truth is you're just always upside down in your car, and you've got a $1,200 a month payment. And you could stay in that same car that's only 2 years old. My car's 10 years old, and it's still a really nice car. So it's not like you're making these huge sacrifices if you're having budget issues and those kind of things.
Well, the other thing that comes from this is that you don't have to live in poverty just because you're doing financial planning. Not everything you earn needs to be given away or saved. I mean, there's biblical principles around spending money, mm-hmm. and that God gives us everything for our enjoyment, mm-hmm. right? So there's certainly nothing wrong with spending something. The key of financial planning is to have a priority so that you can judge the trade-offs of what you spend versus save versus give versus pay against debt, and then be aligned in that. So that if you do decide to get that nice Lexus, you've sat down with your spouse, agreed that's the priority, weighed the trade-offs of that expense versus the other priorities in your life, such as paying down debts or, you know, saving for retirement. And then with that decision made, you step forward into that purchase, as opposed to the way most people buy expensive things, which is, ooh, I saw an ad for this, or my neighbor got one and it's shiny and pretty and I want one, so I'm going to buy it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the other one. This is what I'm guilty of. If I go to a car dealership, and I'm a truck guy, so if I go down to my friend Scott Simpkins' dealership for Petrie Buick GMC, and they sponsor our program as well, and I walk in there and one of his very professional salespeople, I'm wanting to buy that truck.
Yep.
Without consulting with anybody, because that's their job. That's what they do well. And I can't do that. I know that I can't do that. I can, you know, I can make decisions well thought through, but I can do better just myself if I keep myself away from those situations, because I can be sold anything. I'm like the worst with salespeople.
This is why goal setting is so important in finance.
Yeah,
is if the goal is agreed upon and strong enough, and it's that important to you, you don't even consider going to the dealership. It's sort of like if you're really committed to your health and wellness and your fitness, and maybe weight loss is part of those goals. Mm-hmm. You're not even going to go in the donut shop.
Yeah.
Why would you? You're going to walk by it.
You're going to make no provision for your flesh because you realize your weaknesses.
Yeah. You're not even going to open the opportunity. And that is so true with finances. I always find all these parallels with health and money, but it's so important. And then here's the key though. You have to talk about this, because that's great if I'm in a marriage and I'm so committed to my goals that I don't go buy the vehicle. But what if my wife is not familiar with those goals of mine, and she's very inclined to go buy a vehicle, and either she buys it or she's really upset that she can't buy it every day because, you know, I'm preventing her from moving forward because I never communicated my goals. This is where the marriage money issues come up. Is it's not that we want different things, it's that we never talk about the different things we want so that we can find a middle ground or a priority.
And you've said this is common to all aspects of marriage, not just finances.
Yeah, it's about how we spend our time, who we spend our time with, how we raise our children. All these same principles roll over to those other areas of life. Yeah.
Certified financial planner and Kingdom advisor Brian Cochran, the president of John Moore Associates, in studio with us. More information is available to you at johnmoore.com. You might go to the Insights tab and take a look at the webinar that was back on, I think, June 14th, having to do with the money date, how you make financial decisions together with your spouse. Great resources, like a little template, how to set up the money date. There's little note pages on your individual goals. What is your vision for the future? What are your financial goals? What risks could prevent you? And you write these down separate from your spouse. And then you come together and you complete a joint worksheet. And boy, I'll tell you, I think it's fun. Might be a little awkward at first, especially if you haven't done it.
Sure.
Boy, I would highly recommend, if you're planning on getting married, to do this with your fiance, even before you get married.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like so much in life, spiritually, your health, your relationships, it's never too early and it's never too late to start this conversation.
I love it. We're going to be back with Brian Cochran for two more segments. We're going to talk about generosity in our next segment. So I hope you'll stay with us right here on ABQ Connect. I'm with Brian Cochran, certified financial planner and president of John Moore Associates in Albuquerque. Before we go any farther, Brian, when somebody's looking for a financial advisor and they run across somebody that's a certified Kingdom advisor, what does that mean?
Yeah, so a certified Kingdom advisor is a financial professional, which could include an investment advisor, a financial planner, a tax advisor, or an estate planning attorney who has completed a pretty rigorous curriculum, which teaches the application of biblical principles in money management. And what I like about the CKA designation, Certified Kingdom Advisor, is you have to first obtain just a regular financial designation in your space. You have to be a CPA or a certified financial planner or a chartered financial consultant. There's all these different designations that apply. So you first prove your competency in sort of the technical aspects of what you do, and then you lay over it the biblical principles and foundations that drive it. So we often talk about it's like the combination of the Wall Street Journal and the Bible in our world. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the worldly, you know, knowledge, and you need to know that part, but then you need the guidance of the scriptures to make sure you're going the right direction.
There's a lot of people, Brian, that make sound financial decisions that are not Christians, maybe not know anything about the Bible, but when they make those decisions and you see what they did and the success that it births, you almost always can see the biblical integrity of what they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I always like to note, as a certified financial planner, and because of the regulatory oversight we have, we can only do things that are in our client's best interest. It's called a fiduciary obligation. We have to act in the best interest of the client, not in our interests or our preferences. And what the beauty of biblical principles is they are in your best interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use them not just because they're biblical and we're believers. We use them because they work.
Yeah.
And we often list six keys to financial success, we call it, where we go through and educate every client on those. And each one of them is supported by scripture. And we point that out to believers and non-believers who come into our office. We say, by the way, we don't just use these because these are our principles. We use these because they're timeless. Mm. They're transcendent. They're good for all people at all times. And they work.
Yeah.
And we know if you stick to these principles, you're going to experience financial success.
So we're going to talk about giving in this segment. And I think we really need to start with, why is generosity so important, an aspect or a step in managing your finances as a couple?
Yeah. Well, for the same reason it's good for a single person, generosity fights the power of greed.
Mm.
And a lot of the warnings in the Bible about money are about the influence of money, mammon, you know, the spirit of money, on our hearts. It's clear in Scripture that the greatest competition for God's place in our heart is money and material things, greed.
Mm-hmm.
So if generosity is the best way to fight greed, then that's maybe my best tool against the greatest threat, you know, to competition in my heart for Jesus. And if you don't think that's true, anything else that might compete in your heart probably has money connected to it, yeah. Except for maybe sexual desires. I mean, everything else really has a strong financial connection. So, you know, it could be your career, your prestige, your status, but money's connected to all those things in most cases. So that's why generosity is so important as individuals, but also as a couple. And just like everything else we discussed, if generosity is going to be important to you as a believer, you need your spouse to be aligned in that as a priority, not just how much you give, but when you give, where you give. All of that needs to be aligned, or else it's another opportunity for missed expectations and potential conflict.
Yeah. Well, and you've already said, you know, financial issues are a large, maybe the second most probable cause of divorces. And I don't really know that monies or finances are a cause. The flesh might be the cause. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. People get divorced. I am, unfortunately, my marriage failed after 26 years. And I will say that I was pathetic when it comes to this next statement. I didn't pray and meditate about my goals with my former wife.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm embarrassed to say that, but that's just true.
Yeah, and it's a great place to start, especially on the generosity conversation, but we want God's wisdom and influence on all of our money decisions.
Mm-hmm.
A quick aside, some people think their generosity decisions are the spiritual part of their finances. That's not true. If you believe the Bible is true, then you should understand very clearly in the Bible it stated that God owns everything. So every dollar you're making a decision with, not just your giving, is God's money. Therefore, every financial decision is a spiritual decision. Okay.
Love that.
I tend to find that giving is just where I experience the most joy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where I really reflect God's intent the most, is when I'm generous, because we, you know, we're created by a generous God. So, but to your point, a lot of couples don't pray on their money decisions at all. They might pray for their health. They might pray for their career. They pray for the wellness of their children. They pray for peace on earth and all these wonderful things. But they forget to pray, God, may your will be done in my finances. As I decide where to give, spend, you know, everything that goes on in my finances, I want your will to be done. And I think if you open that up, you'll find that you may be more generous because God wants you to experience the joy of generosity. He doesn't tell you to give to take things from you. He tells you to give more so that you can experience the joy of generosity. But here's the key that I took away from our conversation with Joe and Pam. If you're just joining us, they were the ones that were on our webinar on this topic earlier this month. Is Pam gave the example that she had been praying, you know, diligently for years on certain topics. And my takeaway from her conversation is when the opportunities came around money decisions, she could see them because she was praying on them. They were front of mind, and she was then looking for God's response to her requests. And this impacted generosity decisions for them as a couple, career decisions, spending decisions. All of these things were impacted because she would pray for God's wisdom and his will to be done. And, you know, for example, she talked about praying for ways to serve, and then they were presented with this opportunity to serve, and it wasn't an automatic. They didn't have to say yes, but they leaned into it because she said, God, this must be the answer to my prayer. This is so clearly the right opportunity for us. So I think when we pray, we not only receive God's guidance and wisdom, but we also open our minds and hearts to recognition of God's provision when he answers that prayer.
Yeah,
that's a big piece of it.
I really love that. We're with Brian Cochran. We have one more segment with Brian up to the 2 o'clock hour. You're listening to ABQ Connect right here on KLYT Albuquerque. We hope you'll stay with us. And it's a good way to go into the weekend is thinking about ways to communicate with your spouse. So we'll be right back. Brian Cochran, certified Kingdom Advisor, financial planner, and the president of John Moore Associates in studio with us this afternoon. Jim Williams with you. I always love interviewing Brian. It's awesome because he's very calm. He's got great examples, and I want you to be able to take advantage of the free resources that he offers. Just anybody listening, you can go to johnmoore.com, click on the Insights tab. And for example, you can click on this. We've been talking about the money date. If you listen to ABQ Connect about 3 weeks ago, we talked about the money date. And it's a little template that you can use to just kind of help facilitate and organize a conversation that you have with either your fiance or your spouse. And as Brian said earlier in our last segment, it's never too late to start this process. I'm also going to give you Brian's phone number. It's 505-881, or John Moore's. I'm not giving Brian's cell phone. 505-881-5100. That's 505-881-5100. JohnMoore.com. Especially the Insights tab is a really, really helpful free resources that Brian offers. Brian, so in this conversation, we're going to talk about children. And involving the children in big conversations when appropriate. I have never heard you talk about this before.
Yeah, the issues around children and money have become some of the most prominent in the families that we serve for various reasons that we'll get to talk about here in the next few minutes. But for young children, I think a couple of key takeaways for those of you with young children or grandchildren. The first is that there are times where it makes sense to involve the kids in your money decisions and your money conversations. The example that came up in our webinar with Pam and Joe related to Joe's side of the family. He lost his brother and sister-in-law, and they had two sons. So Joe had two nephews. And Joe and Pam felt inclined to bring the nephews into their family, into their household, which, I mean...
Amazing.
Yeah, you double your kid count overnight. That's no small decision. And they sat their children down who were pretty young at the time, and that was a family decision they made. An example for my family, there was a time where we were looking at buying a new home. And being the financial planner, I ran all the numbers, and I saw two clear paths. We could stretch ourselves a little bit on our home and buy a nicer home, bigger home, more expensive home, or we could keep a more modest home which would open up more free cash flow for travel and experiences as a family. And our kids were pretty young, elementary school at the time. And my wife and I were weighing this decision, and we brought the kids in and said, if you had the choice of a bigger house or more fun trips as a family, which would you do? And minds were turning, and they were, you know, ended up being unanimous. All four of us decided we wanted the experiences and the flexibility. Mm. And I thank God for that decision, because I ended up changing firms and taking a financial income step back to make that decision. And had we bought the bigger house, that might have been an impediment to making that decision. So involving the kids is good. And the other piece about this is that brings a sense of transparency, you know, about how do you make money decisions? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I hear the most when we call it money 101 sessions. We offer these to the children and grandchildren of our clients, typically teenagers to early 20s. We'll sit down with them and share with them principles around money. And they go, I didn't know any of this. And I'm thinking about, I know their parents. I know their grandparents. I know they're good stewards. Why did they not teach their kids to be good stewards? Mm-hmm. So I do this a lot with my sons. We'll just be in the car. I'll be like, hey, we just gave this much money to a charity, you know, and they'll be, oh, cool. And I'll say, what do you think the trade-offs are there? What else could we have done with those dollars? And they'll have a whole list in mind of things for themselves. Usually you could have bought me a lot of Legos with that, Dad. Right. But, you know, we often say more is caught than taught. Just have conversations. You don't need to sit them down in a classroom with a textbook and teach them money. Just talk them through your ups and downs and, gosh, you know, I wish we'd go on vacation, but we got this car loan. What's that? You know, let me explain how that works. You know, basically we committed to buying this nice vehicle and that's been great for us. But because of that, you know, we can't say yes to this vacation that we were, you know, could tag along with a friend or family member or something like that. So just that constant exposure to money decisions is great for kids.
I'm thinking back to our talk about generosity in our third segment. How do you teach kids about being generous?
Again, I think the conversations help. We try to model generosity with our kids, big ways and small. You know, we have some friends where we pay for things every month on their behalf so that their families can participate in things that we do. And we do it very much in private. It's not, we don't make a show of it. And we tell our kids when we give. We've made special gifts to the schools they have attended over times. And we tell them, we say, hey, we're asking the school not to tell anybody we made this gift. So keep this amongst us, but you know how they're going to do this, you know, or start that, or do this program. We're funding that, and this is why we made that a priority. Mm. And then we often talk about our money decisions, as I mentioned before, in comparison to things we could have spent on, so that they understand the trade-off. You know, we could have gone on a vacation to Disney World for that, but instead we're making this donation. And it opens their eyes to, oh, okay, giving is a priority, and they get to then also experience some of the joy of generosity. The other thing is to give them money to steward and coach them a little bit. So I'm going to give you, you know, $100, and here's what I suggest you do. You don't have to. Just like God, he's not controlling us, right? He's giving us principles. I suggest you consider a place to give 10 of those dollars or 20 of those dollars. What would you want to give if you did that? And they think, and you'd be amazed how often kids have a charity in mind when you ask them about giving.
Cool.
And I think you should save some of that for the future. And then guess you can spend the rest, though, if you want, and then see what they do.
But think about that practically. Say a 10% gift. Let's say my heart's always been to feed people. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always wanted to make sure that people had food. I just think that's something that we should always do. Because I know there's enough food in the world to feed everybody. Nobody should be starving. So if there's somebody starving, it's on us. Mm-hmm. It's not on God. It's we got to take care of it. So that's always been on my heart. So let's say you give $10 of that $100 that, you know, to your middle school son. And then you mentioned something just now that maybe people didn't catch, and that is you ought to save some of it. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've used this phraseology before. Well, you ought to pay yourself maybe 20%. So $20 ought to go into some kind of savings account. Now, we can say piggy bank, but when you get $1,000, that really ought to be somewhere.
Yeah.
Making some interest.
Yeah, and you can teach those principles. Where I'd say this gets even more real is when they start making their first money. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the people forget this. One of the best things you can teach your kid about money is make them work for money.
Yeah.
You know, some I can't believe how many young people don't work or earn anything nowadays. And so then they will steward it differently.
So maybe there's a little yard work involved for that $100 to be given to the child.
Yeah, or just encourage them to get a job, you know, as soon as they can. I mean, there's a lot of ways to make money as a young person. And so those things will start to instill more of a sense of responsibility and stewardship versus just handing money. But for young kids, you know, really young kids, just giving them the resource. The other thing I would say is don't hesitate to ask them about their feelings about money. So they buy something nice. How does it make you feel to buy that? Or how did it make you feel? Because money is emotional. How did it feel to give that money to Feed New Mexico Kids? You know, we should do, let's go down there and volunteer and pack some of those snack packs they send out with kids every weekend. And then you can see where your money's going. Yeah. And see that need and hear the director talk about it. You know, there's all these things to instill principles. Where we see the biggest challenges, though, isn't just with coaching young kids. It's the young adults, specifically robbing young adult children, which is an oxymoron, adult children, robbing your children of the opportunity to fail.
Okay.
Or to overcome their own challenges. We see that parents often use money as a way to save their kids from potential struggle.
I'm going to give you an example.
Yeah, go for it.
I have five children. All five of them, when they were freshmen in college, started getting credit card offers.
Oh, yeah.
And I won't say which one, but one of them needed to be kind of bailed out. And I just kind of made the decision, look, I'm going to help you to get this paid off, but you're going to be the one that has to pay it off. I'm going to help you get organized to do that.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Don't just bail them out.
And we've seen all kinds of methods there. So we had one client call and said, I need $5,000 out of my account. I said, oh, great. What's it for? We always put in our notes, what's it for? My son needs it to pay off a credit card. And I said, what if you had him pay his credit card, send you the statements, and you match what he pays with your own payment?
I love it.
Meet him halfway. Oh, that's a good idea. Because what lesson is he going to learn if you know, because he did this 3 years in a row, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the kind of thing we're talking about there. And just don't forget, it's through our struggles that we grow. I actually heard, as Jordan Peterson was talking about this on a podcast, that it's now scientifically proven when we face a challenge, something we don't want to do, and we overcome it, there's a part of our brain that actually gets bigger.
Oh, wow.
And that the size of that part of our brain is tied to longevity.
Cool.
And it doesn't have to be a physical struggle.
Yeah.
It could be a hard conversation. You know, it has to be something you don't want to do. And so when people overcome that, when they sacrifice to pay off a debt or to save for something or do something on their own, they get this little buzz, they get self-confidence, they grow that part of their brain, their DNA literally changes, and they are a better person than they were physically, than they were the day before. Why would you rob your kid of that growth?
Yes.
I mean, that's so important.
I will say that that's a dilemma that many bankers have, because a banker can always loan you more money than you need. Always. And I remember people wanting to do a home equity line of credit to consolidate a $30,000 credit card. Okay, well, I'll do those. Well, what did they do a year later? They came back and said, I got another $30,000 that I got to pay off. And so you want those habits to change. And Brian, we're always so blessed to have you. JohnMoore.com. Brian is the Certified Kingdom Advisor, Financial Planner, and President of John Moore Associates. 505-881-5100. He has a whole bunch of financial advisors to help you. And he's been mentoring them and training them for a long time. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.